So anyway, this is the Tater Report. You can find us on SoundCloud and Facebook, and we try to keep up with things. Ishmael Reed told us he produced a photograph of the demonstrations at the time of the so-called Central Park Five. We'll try to locate that and put it on the Facebook page to remind everybody how deeply people got into this idea of basically creating lynch mob against teenagers, the oldest 16 years old, their lives destroyed. So we need to talk about that in the future. This is the Tater Report, and I believe we're joined by Zafar Bengash of Crescent International. Are you there, Zafar?
Hello, Phil. Yes, I'm with you.
Thank you very much for joining us, because now we spoke to you last week, and then I don't know what you said, but we had a close call in the Gulf of Hormuz, where when we spoke to you, the issue was the tankers and
yes.
who might have struck them or might not have. And then we learned of this, the Iranian shot down an American drone.
Yes.
And it became pretty tense. I want to know your thoughts, and I want to start on the point that seems to be underplayed, but if everybody has agreed that it was wise not to follow through by, you know, Trump's running right up to the brink and then stepping back, they say, you know, well, you know, it was a valuable drone. They're telling us how much it cost. Incidentally, I understand nobody's ever shot one down before, but that one. And so they said, well, it's good you stepped back. But there was a second plane, and the Iranians said right away, I watched, I thought, well, sure, the West is going to deny, the U.S. will deny it. But now they've confirmed, yes, there was a plane. What was that?
Well, I'm glad you asked. First of all, let's talk about the drone. The Iranians, when they shot it down, it was over Iran's airspace as well as over its territorial waters. And it was accompanied by another plane, another surveillance plane, which is referred to as P-8. And there were 35 people on board. Now, Iran announced that they deliberately did not target that plane, although that was also violating Iranian airspace. They specifically targeted the drone after giving several warnings to the operators of the drone that they have violated Iranian airspace and that this drone is flying very close to an Iranian naval base. And they simply will not allow that kind of intrusion into their territory, particularly over sensitive areas. It is also important to keep in mind that it seems that Iran has very sophisticated equipment and missiles and electronic systems that they are able to target the drone, and their missile did not go astray to hit the P-8 plane mm-hmm. that had 35 people on board. Now, obviously, you know, the Americans are in violation of Iranian airspace and water areas, water territories, and they have made it very clear that they would defend their territory. This, as the head of the Revolutionary Guards, Hossein Salimi, announced, he said that this is our red line. Our mm-hmm. territory is our red line, and we will defend it with all our might. And if it happens again, we will do it again.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, also the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps airspace division commander Hajizadeh, he also said that we could have hit the other plane with 35 people on board, but we deliberately did not target it because we wanted to send a message to the Americans that we are capable of defending our territory. And incidentally, I think it is important to keep in mind that this is not the first time that the Americans have done it. Mm-hmm. Iran has shot American drones several times before.
They've captured one.
They captured one in December of 2011. They actually overpowered that drone's electronic system and successfully brought it down. Hmm. And the Americans at that time had said that, well, our plane has crashed. And then the Iranians produced an intact American drone and said, here it is. We've got it. It's with us.
I think this is in my yard. I found this in my yard.
and they have, of course, you know, through reverse engineering, they have been able to produce a lot of drones of that nature.
Yeah. So, but, you know, but that underlines something very important. I mean, that's what Canadians, we live under what they call America's nuclear umbrella, which is a dangerous place to be living. And Ms. Freeland and Trudeau are comfortable with it, but that kind of behavior, this a plane with 35 people aboard, and it was an intelligence gathering plane, obviously.
Yes.
But they're dangling that almost in a way that a schoolyard bully puts the chips on his shoulder.
Yes.
Had they it been hit, we don't know what consequences would have come from
that. Exactly, exactly. And incidentally, Iran has made very clear, they've said that, you know, if we are attacked, They've first of all said that we do not want to have war with the U.S. or with anybody else. And in fact, they have shown it through their own conduct over the last 250 years that Iran has never initiated aggression against any country in the last 250 years. And as Jimmy Carter reminded us only a few weeks ago, that in the 242-year history of the United States, it has not been at war only for 17 of those 242 years. So Iran has never attacked a country in 250 years, and America has not been at peace for the last 242 years minus 17 years. So we can see, you know, who's the belligerent here. Yeah. But Iran also made clear that if we are attacked, we will retaliate with full force, and it will not just be the United States. We are going to hit U.S. interests in the region. We're going to hit Saudi Arabia. We're going to hit United Arab Emirates. And if Israel were involved, we will target Israel as well. So they made it absolutely clear that we don't want war, but we are not going to sit lying down, that others will come and attack us and bully us and try to intimidate us, because we are not going to be intimidated. Mm-hmm. And secondly, they have said that in the Strait of Hormuz, at the narrowest point, it is only 21 nautical miles. Now, Iran has its territorial waters in 12 nautical miles, and Oman, which is on the other side, has the other 12 nautical miles, although there aren't two 12 nautical miles, because it's only 21 nautical miles. Uh-huh. So in fact, at the narrowest point, the Strait of Hormuz does not have what we refer to as international waters. So any tanker, any ship, any military vessel that passes through that narrow point in the Strait of Hormuz has to have Iran's permission, because it will have to go through Iran's territorial waters.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is Iran's jurisdiction, Iran's call, if it wants to allow those vessels to pass through or not. And Iran has said, and of course, you know, the U.S. has imposed sanctions that they're trying to block Iran's sale and export of oil. And their leaders have said, if we cannot export oil from here, or we cannot export oil to the world, nobody else will. Mm-hmm. And Iran is absolutely capable of enforcing that. So when we look at all of this information and the scenario, we can see that Iran has been acting very, very responsibly. It has not been provocative in any way, despite the fact that it has been subjected to illegal sanctions when Trump walked away from the nuclear deal that was signed in 2015 and then ratified in October of 2015 by a Security Council resolution 2231. So in other words, that's an international treaty. It was a multilateral treaty arrived at after years of negotiations between Iran and the six world powers plus the European Union. And then that agreement was ratified by the UN Security Council. So it is not for Trump to simply walk away and then say that, well, I don't like the treaty, so I'm going to walk away from it, and Iran has to now sit down with us and renegotiate. Iran has said, there is a treaty in force, and you are obliged under international law to abide by it. You cannot go around acting like an outlaw and then expect that, you know, others would not defend their interests. So we see that we are in a very, very dangerous situation that the U.S. has created. And I'd like to add that that situation has actually been created not so much by Trump as by his two war-mongering officials, John Bolton and Pompeo, Mike Pompeo. These are the two people that are pushing for war. And, of course, behind them are the Israelis that are absolutely very, very keen and desperate to have America attack Iran. And incidentally, the Saudis are also involved in it. They have told the Americans, if you attack Iran, we will pay for your war costs and so on. Yeah. So we have these two rogue regimes.
By the way, they were definitely going to pay.
Absolutely.
There might be a price they weren't thinking about.
Yes.
You know, it's extremely dangerous. I mean, actually, anybody who becomes objective about it and said, what will be the consequences? You don't want to hear about what the consequences would be.
Exactly. I mean, and I can tell you, I've never advocated war. I've always opposed war because...
Are you about to start?
Exactly, and I know how destructive these wars are, but just look at the scenario. If a war were to start and the Strait of Hormuz were to be shut down, or Saudi or Emirati oil fields were to be targeted, you can rest assured that the price of oil is going to shoot beyond the $200 barrel. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. In fact, Goldman Sachs, some people in Goldman Sachs have said that that is going to shoot up to $1,000 a barrel.
Mm-hmm.
It'll crash the world economy. The world economy simply cannot afford a $1,000 a barrel oil. And I think this is something that people should take note of and should pay close attention to, that we are dealing with madmen that want to blow up the whole world and crash the whole world's economy. We're going to be faced by a depression. The U.S., you know, the U.S. economy will crash. It has a, you know, GDP of something like $60 billion. In fact, there's $60 trillion. The world GDP, in fact, with the derivatives and so on, it is $1.8 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
And that is simply, they're just going to all crash. These are all based on derivatives. So you can see the financial chaos that will be created in the world. And somehow, you know, some of these people in the United States think that wars are some kind of games that they can play, and they can go around.
It's over there. It's over there, and they won't have any repercussion.
Yeah. Now, of course, it will have very, very serious repercussions for the whole world, and particularly for the United States itself, because the United States' debt stands at something like $60 trillion. $22 trillion is internal debt, and another $38 trillion is external debt. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, America is basically running a casino economy, you know, which is all on bubbles and so on. And since, you know, the dollar is used as a global reserve currency, but that is changing, incidentally. Both the Chinese and the Russians are moving furiously away from the dollar because of American sanctions.
Because of irrational behavior.
Yes, exactly, because the way America has imposed sanctions on Russia and it is... imposed or involved in trade wars with China. Both Russia and China have moved massive amounts of their dollar holdings or U.S. Treasury bonds into gold purchases. And that's why gold has skyrocketed to $1,400 an ounce. Yeah. From only a few weeks ago, it was only around $1,200 an ounce. And this is going to go up because the Chinese are furiously buying gold. The Russians are furiously buying gold. The whole world is actually moving towards gold because this currency, this paper currency, is becoming useless. You know?
Yeah, and they're locked in this strange hegemonic world where the U.S. does not respect states it deals with.
Yes, unfortunately.
And they use sanctions, so these states actually don't have any choice but to begin to think about resisting in a collective way. We're speaking to Zafar Bengash. Crescent-online.com, am I right?
.net.
No, .net. I always guess the wrong one.
Yeah, that's okay. It's a difficult one, yes.
And Zafar, I better ask you this question. There's this One of the matters that has emerged here is clearly the U.S., maybe because of its own rhetorical or egotistical reasons, but it always underestimates countries, but particularly Islamic Republic. And I see this headline in the Star, U.S. attacks Iranian military computers. That doesn't seem like a good idea. That was yesterday's paper.
Yeah.
If they did, it didn't seem to do any good.
No, because Iran's...
they're not as smart as they think they are.
That's correct. In fact, Iranian scientists are extremely smart and capable, and they were able to neutralize this U.S. Cyber attack. And the chief of the, Iran's National Security Council actually announced that today. He said that now that the U.S. has openly admitted this, I can say to you that we neutralized their spy operators, and we have been successfully able to block all of their attempts. We said that, we didn't want to disclose this, but since they've admitted it, we can come forward and reveal it to the world. So, the U.S. seems to think that it can go ahead and carry out cyber attacks, etc.
To be openly bragging about it, only a week before they said they were doing the same to the Russians, that they planted malware in the Russian power system, which these are acts of war, by the way.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Any state who chooses to can respond in kind. If you say you did that, well, then you have to pay for it.
Correct.
Yeah. Zafar Benkash, such a pleasure to talk to you. We really needed that information, and we look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you very much, Phil. Appreciate it.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Zafar Benkash, Crescent International. And this is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5.